Rain poured down on little Rosie as she waited for her parents' car to pull up to the theater. The child wore a white hand-me-down dress, which was now soaked and see-through. Her teeth chattered wildly, and so too did her goosebump-ridden arms shake as she held them to cover herself. No one was around to see her, not at 10 in the evening, but not many would risk exposing themselves to strangers in such a way, let alone a child of 9. The smell of rainwater penetrated her nostrils, sharp and fresh. Rosie looked back at the theater. Brighthaven Grand Cinema. The Empire Strikes Back. The Star Wars saga continues. 70mm Dolby Stereo. Rosie didn't know what MM was, nor what Dolby Stereo meant. Still, it had been a good movie, and she had taken a particular liking to the frog Jedi Yoda who lived in a swamp. Rosie hated cliffhangers, even if she didn't know the word for them, and she could not wait for the next movie. What time was it? Surely she'd been waiting for at least half an hour. Had they really forgotten again? It had only been 2 days since they forgot to pick her up after music class. She raised one hand to her eyes, keeping the other over her chest. It was of little use. Warm tears mingled with cold raindrops and concentrated at her chin before falling and splashing on the ground. Rosie considered. The theater was open for 15 more minutes. It was hardly a difficult decision. And so, soaked to the bone, Rosie stepped inside the theater. The ceiling lights were still on, but the cool blue and pink lights that Rosie loved had already been turned off. A man stood at the till. He wore a long-sleeved white shirt with a bright red vest on top, as well as a hat that made him look like a carnival worker. The man looked up at Rosie as she walked into the lobby, dark bags under his eyes. They hid something behind them, an unspoken darkness Rosie couldn't quite place. It reminded her of how she felt she must have looked when her dog Rex had passed. The man scrunched his eyebrows, which did not help with his already wrinkling appearance.
"Hey, kiddo," he sighed. "We're closed. Come back tomorrow."
Rosie looked down, eyes still red and bloodshot. Her hopes sank deeper than a stone in a pond, and she turned around without so much as a glance at the man. She heard a small groan from behind her. Then the man said,
"You can stay another 15 minutes, till the last picture's over, but no longer, yeah?"
Rosie cracked a smile fainter than the light of the moon as she turned back to the man. The darkness behind his eyes cleared a little at the sight. As he took in the sight of her dress for the first time, he rubbed his forehead in frustration.
Damn,
he uttered, then spoke more clearly.
"Say, how about we get you some new clothes, yeah?"
Rosie's eyes widened, and the slight smirk on her face grew to an honest-to-God smile. The man smiled back, though it didn't quite reach his eyes. He led her to a room with a sign above it that read, "Staff Only." It was missing letters, that much was obvious, but which ones? She didn't know. The man opened the door and waved for her to follow. Inside, there were a few lockers pressed against the wall with names on them, along with 2 benches in the middle of the room. They looked mighty uncomfortable. The man opened a locker with the name S. Kingsley, then rummaged inside.
"Yeah,"
the man said, handing her a white shirt.
"This'll be a bit big on you, but it should make up for the lack of pants. I'll take this too, or you'll soak right through my shirt."
He handed her a white towel, which felt smooth and soft in her hands. She held it with awe, stroking her palm across the fabric and letting the softness of it caress her hand. Her arms folded around it, embracing it in a tight hug. She kept her head down, stroking her cheek with a towel. The man pursed his lips, grimacing as he anticipated the question he knew would come. Rosie looked up at him with puppy-like eyes, eyebrows furrowed.
All right, keep the damn thing," he smiled. "You dry yourself before putting that on, yeah?"
Rosie nodded.
"Okay, I'll be right outside if you need me."
The door slammed shut behind him, leaving little Rosie all alone in the locker room. It suddenly dawned on her just how alone she was. Sure, there was the seemingly nice man working the register, along with people watching the last showing of the night, but they were too far away to do anything in case of an emergency. Even the nice man wouldn't be able to help her. The thought of him comforted her, but the image of the locker room made her shiver. Rosie took off her dress, drying herself with her amazingly soft towel. So many lockers, she thought. Something was inside one of them. Something with long, sharp claws and a face of shadows. The thought was silly, but still it dominated her thoughts so much that she momentarily stood frozen in place. Long, sharp fangs, and arms so long that its curling claws would scrape against the floor's tiles. She imagined it, hulking and tall, with a maw of teeth that would sink into her flesh like needles. Rosie hated needles. Always had, Mama had said. Ever since the day a nurse first poked her, Rosie shook the thought. Those were silly thoughts for silly kids. Kids who had seen too many movies. Perhaps it had been the Yeti-like Wampa from the movie she'd seen that had conjured such thoughts in her head. She put on the oversized shirt, and it came halfway down to her knees. The man had been right. Rosie went up to the door and turned the handle. Something did smell awfully rotten in this room, like the compost bin she'd had to throw her half-eaten apples into, earthy and decayed. She glanced back one last time, then left the room.
"I was beginning to think you'd gotten yourself locked in the locker," the man said. He was standing right beside the locker room that had been waiting for Rosie to come out.
The little girl giggled, towel clutched to her chest.
You like that, huh?
Rosie did like tongue twisters. They made her feel as though her brain turned to goop and her tongue was just a piece of meat flapping around in her mouth.
"Peter Parker picked a pack of pickled peppers," said the man.
"Peter Piper,"
Rosie corrected, giggling to herself.
"Nah, I'm pretty sure it's Peter Parker."
An awkward silence followed, the kind that stretched a few seconds into a few hours. They stood there, smiling at each other awkwardly, before turning their attention to the crowd exiting Theater One. With an apologetic smile, the man turned toward Rosie.
"Your parents, they coming?"
he asked in a calm, low voice. Rosie shook her head, holding the towel tight against her chest. Sighing, the man sat down on the ground next to Rosie.
Shit.
He tried, but Rosie was giggling hysterically already.
"You ain't heard that from me,"
he chuckled. The two stayed there a few minutes longer as the man pondered what to do. He tossed out a few quick ideas, like calling CPS or other authorities, but Rosie's scared eyes told him that this was a very bad idea. Still, he was left with very few choices.
"Your parents, they got a landline?"
Rosie nodded.
"You know their numbers?"
She nodded again. The man looked up at her expectantly, but Rosie scrunched her eyebrows.
"I can't say that to strangers,"
she said.
"Well, I'll need to get you home. I'll be okay. Just this once,"
the man told her. His calm smile was reassuring, and he did genuinely seem to want to help. Finally relenting, Rosie took a pen and a slip of paper the man offered her and scribbled down the crude numbers. The man smiled and thanked her.
"I'm gonna go call him now, okay? You just stay right here."
So, the man turned and walked towards the lobby. He was the last person to ever see little Rosie alive. At first, Rosie sat and waited patiently for the man to return, but as minutes ticked by, she grew bored and curious. In the right place and time, those feelings are healthy and even fun. They bring wonder to a world that desperately needs it. In the wrong place and time, however, those feelings show you why the world needs far more wonders to balance out all that is wrong here. Rosie stood up and pranced around the empty corridor. She walked past the empty theater rooms and remembered all the movies she'd seen in them. Oh, how she loved this place. She came here often and knew the place by heart. She skipped further down the hallway, the white towel dancing behind her as she held it out. It moved and swayed in sync with her new shirt, jerking to the left and right with Rosie's skipping steps. There were couches and cushioned chairs, but Rosie knew not to sit in them if she didn't want nasty gunk sticking to her clothes. People were disgusting like that. She walked happily past them. Soon, Rosie reached the end of the hallway, and she prepared herself to turn back and find the man to ask what was taking so long. Then, she saw lights coming from Theater 7. The doors of the room were wide open, and brilliant, flickering lights danced on the walls of the entrance. Rosie couldn't help herself. She took a few steps closer, close enough to hear the faint sound of jingling bells. Tingling, tingling, accompanied by heavy footfalls and very quiet, old-timey orchestral music. There were occasional laughs and hoots, but they sounded muffled and pre-recorded. Rosie stepped through the doors. The entrance had grown dark. Immediately, the smell of paint and charcoal came upon her in a wave. The scents were so intense, it was as if she had a bucket of paint and a piece of charcoal up her nose. The chemical smell mixed with the dark, earthy scent and created a whole new odor, like a piece of dirt soaked in wiper fluid. Rosie loved this smell. It reminded her of art class, of the canvases and paper she expressed herself on. Each stroke opened a rabbit hole to a whole new world, just wide enough that she could fit through and explore all that it offered. The jingling bells grew louder as she grew nearer. When Rosie finally turned the corner, she saw that the theater was as dark as a moonless night, except there was a moon here, in the form of a large spotlight centered directly on what appeared to be a man. He was facing away from Rosie, and he mimed and danced. A cloth crown with four ends adorned his head, a small bell having been attached to each end. His black and white striped clothes bulged as if puffed up with air. His shoes, which were as black as coal, made delightful tapping sounds on the wooden floor as he danced. Tingling went the bells again, as the jester jumped up and down, his arms outstretched towards the empty theater. He stopped and exaggeratedly sniffed the air. His head snapped towards Rosie in an instant, and he tilted his head curiously. On his face was a stark, white mask with an expressive smile carved into it. The eye holes and mouth were far too large for any semblance of realism. With a pep in his step, he walked towards a stunned Rosie. His back was bent so as to remain at eye level with the child, and he swayed his arms back and forth in a playful motion.
"Why, bless my bells."
Though it was partially muffled by the mask.
"A guest. Oh, a dear little guest come to see my little show."
He stomped an arm's length away from Rosie, then crouched down to meet her gaze. His legs, their outline visible through the fabric, looked thin and emaciated, like he was walking on stilts.
"What show?"
asked Rosie.
"What show?"
replied the jester in a mock offense. The words put a sour sort of taste in the back of Rosie's mouth, like the acid reflux she had some mornings.
"Why, the greatest show of the century, silly. With songs and a full audience and the dancing, prancing jester at the center."
With each word, his head bobbed up and down flamboyantly.
"But there's no audience,"
said Rosie, and the jester nodded along solemnly. His mask seemed to droop, the corners of the carved mouth tugging down in the darkness. He looked down, then said in a dramatically sad tone,
"Oh, they all left. They always say they'll come watch, but they never do."
A pit formed in Rosie's stomach. It threatened to grow with each beat of her little heart, to balloon and pop. She hated that feeling even more than she hated needles.
"All gone home, left poor old jester to pack up the laughter himself."
He looked up at her again, a sheen stretching across the white mask as it caught the brilliance of the spotlight again. He cocked his head, and Rosie swore she felt him furrow his eyebrows behind the mask.
"You're not supposed to be here, are you?"
he more stated than asked.
"Ah, what would your parents say?"
He let a pause drift through the air, and a knot of guilt formed alongside the pit in her stomach.
"But I'll forgive it. Yes, I will. Because I do so love an audience."
He stretched forth his hand, which was covered by a white glove.
"Do you want to be my audience, Rosie?"
he said, drawing out her name in a strange, delicate way she had never heard before. It struck her.
"How do you know my name?"
The jester's bells jingled as he giggled.
"Because you're tonight's star, silly."
His giggle turned into a howling laugh, and Rosie swore she caught a sparkle of twilight and stars in his two big eye holes. Shooting stars streaked across the pitch-black canvas of his eyes, then exploded, coinciding with his booming laughter. Rosie shifted uncomfortably as he led her to the front row of seats and sat her down in the centermost seat. She sat down, the seats more plump and soft than usual. The jester walked down to the end of the row, picked up a canvas and an easel, and set them down a few feet in front of Rosie.
They play these moving picture shows in this here room, but sometimes you have to dare to do something different. Do you like paintings, Rosie?
She nodded, keeping her eyes on the man as he made suave, over-the-top gestures. The jester giggled happily.
Marvelous. This will be my... No, our masterpiece.
He dipped his brush into a tin of paint resting near her feet, though Rosie hadn't noticed it was there. The jester swirled the brush exaggeratedly with a dramatic flair. He then made a few quick strokes. The bell is going tingling with each movement.
Is that an hourglass?
Rosie asked curiously, relaxing in her seat.
Oh, a clever little bird,
he said, eye holes gleaming.
Why, yes, that's an hourglass in a circle.
What does it mean?
Asked little Rosie again, a smile tugging at the corners of her mouth.
Interested in symbolism, are we? Well, this here hourglass is running empty. You ever think about that, Rosie, how time's running out?
He leaned in close to her, back bent and knees completely straight. Little Rosie shook her head.
Good. You shouldn't worry about such things. It won't run out in your time.
Rosie shifted uncomfortably, clutching her towel close to her chest. The jester dipped his brush again, this time into a color Rosie couldn't quite name. It shimmered between red and gold and black, changing with the dusty luminescence of the spotlight. His strokes grew faster now, less careful, as he painted over the hourglass. Long, uneven lines stretched upward like vines. The paint dripped down the canvas in translucent streaks, pooling on the floor. Rosie frowned, still a bit uncomfortable.
That looks like a person.
A man,
said the jester brightly.
A man on fire, or perhaps he is fire himself. Hard to tell, really.
He chuckled to himself, brushing in more streaks.
Art transcends humanity, child. That is the most valuable lesson the human can learn. Art is when you peek beyond the curtain to see beyond what is in front of us. It is to meet the true God in all his glory. To see the day of the black sun.
Rosie hugged the towel tighter.
That's scary.
The jester froze, brush in midair. Then he turned slowly. So slow that the bell has made no sound.
Scary,
he repeated softly.
No, no, my dear. Art isn't scary. It's honest.
He dipped the brush again, the bells jingling faintly.
When people look at a painting and feel scared, it means it's telling them the truth. And people don't much like the truth, do they?
Rosie didn't answer. She just stared at the painted figure, the circle, the hourglass, the burning man beneath it. And something about it made her chest ache. The jester twirled on his heels, spreading his arms wide.
And there it is. Our masterpiece. Time and fire. Laughter and loss. Isn't it beautiful?
Rosie swallowed hard.
It's pretty.
Pretty.
He echoed with a sigh.
Yes, I suppose that's one word for it, but I prefer...
He paused, tapping his chin with the brush handle.
I prefer truthful.
Then, as if shaking off a thought, he clapped his hands together, then twirled the brush in his hand.
Now, every artist must finish what he starts, Rosie. A masterpiece isn't complete without a touch of light.
He dipped the brush into the tin again, and it made a splishing sound. The paint was thicker now, and unnaturally dark. He looked at her with those deep, endless pits.
Would you help me, dear? Just a little touch, a finger's worth.
Rosie hesitated.
I'm not meant to do that with strangers.
It's okay. Just this once.
He said, and the broad smile on his stark white mask seemed somehow warped and wicked in the light of the spotlight. Rosie looked away uncomfortably, but felt obligated to comply. The jester had made her a painting, after all.
Come, come, Rosie, don't be shy. Every great work needs a signature.
She stepped forward, small hand trembling as she reached for the brush. The jester guided it toward her, his gloved fingers brushing against hers.
There,
he cooed.
A delicate hand for a delicate stroke.
Then, faster than she could react, the brush clattered to the floor. The jester's hand darted forward and seized her wrist. The bells jingled.
Hold still now,
he said in a deep, rotten voice. Rosie screamed. She screamed blue murder while the thing behind her held her by the hair, face planted into the canvas. She heard the sound of cloth tearing, and a foul odor escaped the monster that held her. There was a swift motion. Rosie could only feel the cold air following its movement. Building hot, white pain exploded from her neck, and Rosie's raw throat could no longer scream. She felt a warmth trickle down from her neck to her new shirts and towel, and the same warmth spurt out like water from a garden hose. Not 5 seconds later did she lose consciousness, and a minute later, Rosie Linley was dead.
Perfect,
murmured the jester as he kicked little Rosie's body aside. He stepped back, admiring the canvas, the circle, the hourglass, and now a bright red smear cutting through them both, still glistening under the light. He crouched down on his wooden legs and dipped the brush into the pool of blood beneath Rosie, then added the title of his masterpiece. Excerpt from Brighthaven Times, March 14th, 2020. A decades-old unsolved disappearance may have a chilling new connection. In 1981, 9-year-old Rosie Linley vanished from the Brighthaven Grand Cinema. Police recovered a canvas in Theater 7, painted with a mixture of paint and human blood, believed to be Rosie's, bearing the words, "For little Rosie, my masterpiece." A towel, unwillingly white, was also found, but by the time investigators recovered it, the towel was stained a deep crimson. No body was ever recovered, and the only suspect, Stephen Kingsley, was convicted of first-degree murder and executed in 1994. Investigators revisiting the case this week noted a striking similarity to a home invasion in the city's northern district last year. During that incident, 3 teen perpetrators left a crudely drawn circle enclosing an hourglass in the victim's house, a symbol identical to the one featured on Kingsley's canvas. Authorities have confirmed the artwork and the symbol are now being examined for further potential links, though they state that there is no cause for alarm. We believe the incident in the Northern District was likely a case of copycats, said Police Chief Gordon, noting that the teens may have taken inspiration from historical reports of Kingsley's crime. However, some online true crime communities have questioned this explanation, suggesting that the reoccurring symbol could indicate a deeper or ongoing pattern.
Thank you for listening and delving with me into the dark together.
Please remember to leave a thumbs up and subscribe if you feel so inclined. The more engagement this video gets, the more YouTube will push my content to others.
Thus, the following will grow.
All stories read in this channel will be available on Spotify, iTunes, and just about everywhere else. Links in the description.
Thank you for listening and feeding the cause. We'll be seeing you.